Your reaction to the verdict?
Again, Dr. Gosnell found guilty first-degree murder, and he had no comment.
The next steps are to prepare for a penalty phase, which is scheduled for next Tuesday in this same courtroom.
That's a Philadelphia NBC affiliate reporter trying to get the attention of Dr. Kermit Gosnell as he was led out of the courthouse in prison garb to be taken off to prison after three of the four counts against him for first-degree murder were decided by a jury earlier today, and Gosnell's defense attorney, Jack McMahon, explaining what comes next for Dr. Gosnell in this trial. Joining us to talk about the verdict in the trial of Philadelphia abortionist Kermit Gosnell, Hadley Arkus. He's professor of jurisprudence in American institutions at Amherst College, and he is author of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act of 2002. Hadley, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Well, thanks for having me back, Jim. Always good to be here.
So what does the framer of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act think of the verdict in the Kermit Gosnell
case?
Well,
it's quite right. And what I'm thinking is my concern over the last few weeks is the absolute distraction that's set in among the conservative media and even the pro-life organizations who've been railing against Gosnell but seem to have forgotten that we did pass a federal law about this. It's curious how the conservatives and even the pro-life organizations have screened this out, so that lately, you know, if you see the piece I posted today in the public discourse, we have Senator Lee, Mike Lee, saying we ought to have hearings, pass a resolution. There's no need for a resolution. We have a federal act, and this is exactly the moment to return to that federal act to restore the penalties that were taken out initially because people were concerned about averting a veto from then-President Clinton, and then it was kept in that form, even though we had a new president, George W. Bush. By bringing hearings about the act right now, we could bring out something that surprised us all later, which was that this business of killing a child after who survived an abortion occurred far more often, in far larger numbers than even we had suspected at the time. The most usual form is the live birth abortion, which a child is delivered whole, alive, and then simply put in a refuse room to die. Now, we'd say it's about time. People could say, well, the federal act doesn't have civil penalties. It certainly doesn't have capital punishment. But it's rather like the situation we had in the 1940s and 50s where people who killed were blacks who were killed in the custody of sheriffs in the South. We'd have the sheriff indicted for violations of civil rights, and people would say, well, look, if that's just a fine to violate somebody's civil rights. Local people could have prosecuted these killers for murder. But the critical point was that once the federal government really did become engaged and brought out that there was something serious here, well, then other people would take that more seriously and local prosecutions would be stirred. Now, so is it very important that this was stirred? People took this seriously in Pennsylvania. But the thing that's really so remarkable is Planned Parenthood and even certain conservative commentators saying this just goes too far. It's infanticide. We say, well, what do you think is really different about this dismembering the same child 5 minutes, five days earlier before the child came out of the womb? And what's maybe striking here is the kind of fog of pretense that even conservative commentators have been willing to put up to sort of put this Gosnell case into some separate category unto itself.
Hadley Arkus is our guest to be with us for another 10 minutes on the other side of the break. We're getting his reaction to the verdict in the trial of Philadelphia abortionist Kermit Gosnell. He's professor of jurisprudence and American institutions at Amherst College, and he's author of the now, well, it's more than 10 years old, the Born Alive Infants Protection Act. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We'll be right back.
South Africa,
China,
Germany,
Trinidad and
Tobago. Did you know that people listen to Issues Etc. around the world? India,
Sweden,
Egypt,
France,
Turkey,
Japan,
Australia,
Canada,
United Kingdom,
Hong Kong,
Austria,
Finland,
Malaysia,
Singapore,
Bulgaria,
Korea,
Brazil.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines,
Mexico,
Spain,
New Zealand,
Kuwait.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Islam, worship, feminism, pietism, postmodernism. You can meet and hear Issues Etc. regular guests discussing these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $100 per person. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14 and 15 in Collinsville, Illinois, issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Monday afternoon, the 13th of May. We were talking about the verdict in the trial of Philadelphia abortionist Kermit Gosnell with Hadley Arkus, the author of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act of 2002. So it sounds like what you're suggesting here is this is a perfect time to number one, remember that we have had that act on the books for 10 years, and to beef up that act. How would that take place, Hadley?
I think the most sensible thing to do, the most common sense thing to do, is just hold hearings on the Born Alive Act. Because, to find out, we've had 10 years, there was an attempt to enforce the act under the Bush administration, and it went nowhere. It got ground down. Because if there are no civil penalties, we had fines in there initially. What the act can do, though, is since we have a statute now that forbids the killing of a child who survives an abortion, that provides potentially a ground for removing all federal funds from any hospital or clinic that houses that kind of procedure. And would also provide the ground for removing tax exemptions from any facility that does that, because you could now say that any facility that does this is just not in accord with public policy. So first you could have hearings to take evidence on how extensive, in fact, this experience is. How many cases we have seen already? Then also consider what penalties could be added. How difficult it is right now to enforce that statute when there are no penalties, and we have to work through the cumbersome method of trying to remove federal funds. But it also has helpful politically in sharpening the question, because the penalties were held back so that the bill could be precisely a teaching bill. It would plant premises in the law. It would point out that even the child marked for an abortion has a claim to the protections of the law that do not hinge on whether anyone wants her, whether her presence serves the interests of any other person. Now, once that premise was in place, of course, you could raise the question about what's different about the same child 5 minutes earlier, 5 weeks earlier, 5 months earlier. So it helps just to put that out again. We planted the premise, and I can put the question to the Democrats. Not a single Democrat voted against this bill when it finally came through. They didn't want it. They didn't like it. They railed against it, but finally they all voted for it. And you could put the question to them. You all thought it was wrong to refuse treatment to a child who survived an abortion. If you think it's wrong, how wrong was it? Tell us the kind of penalty you think would be aptly measured to the kind of wrong that you were denouncing here. would it be at least as important as a moving violation in traffic? And lastly, what about the only national Democrat, the only Democrat of national significance who'd oppose that act? Then-Senator Barack Obama in the state legislature of Illinois, who opposed the same bill in the state of Illinois and declared it was unconstitutional. It was incompatible with Roe versus Wade. Well, the president has already pronounced a judgment on the unconstitutionality, in his view, of the Defense of Marriage Act. Well, he should be invited now to tell us whether he still holds to his view from 10 years earlier that it's somehow unconstitutional to do what was just done in Philadelphia, to convict somebody, to hold him responsible for killing a child born alive. The president should be asked to tell us whether he considers that kind of a legal action to punish, hold Gosnell accountable, whether he considers that to be incompatible with the right articulated in Roe versus Wade. Because if it is, then we're finding that the very meaning of Roe versus Wade, 40 years later, is hardly settled at all. Most people in the country would not, I think, accept the notion of Roe versus Wade, that it entails the right to kill the child who survives.
Some would argue that federal legislation, even the 10-year-old Born Alive Act, is unnecessary. After all, didn't we just see Kermit Gosnell convicted of first-degree murder on 3 counts? How do you respond?
Well, except what I drew upon with, you know, in that overly lengthy first statement of mine. First of all, it provides a national focus. It draws a national attention to the issue. And the attention drawn to the first Born Alive Act was, in fact, seemed to have a contributing effect in bringing forth the equivalent, the same Born Alive Infants Protections Act that we saw at work in Illinois, now in Florida. So the federal act has the effect of sharpening the issue and sharpening the public discussion now as people try to explain to us just why they think that this goes too far, why this is infanticide rather than abortion, or just what is all that different between abortion and what they call infanticide. So I think the bringing back the federal bill, having hearings again, focusing public attention on it, will have the effect that the first bill was meant to do, which is to bring home to people that right now, that abortion license, that liberty articulated in Roe versus Wade, would represent a right to kill the baby at any time for any reasons, and even when it comes out of the womb. That's something that people, curious enough, still find jarring. And they find it jarring because the media managed to screen it out through the simple device of not reporting on the bill in the media. When the Born Alive Act was up, we had something comparable to what we've seen with the Gosnell trial, where the media simply stayed away from it. So the Born Alive Act comes as news, and perhaps that accounts for why it seems to have fled the memories even of the conservatives on the scene.
Why does that myth about Roe, the precedent it set, especially as it relates to the Born Alive Act, why does that persist? I was just reading a short book on the history of American law, and when it came to the subject of abortion, the distinct impression was given by the author that Roe v. Wade provided for a woman's right to choose to abort her child for the first 2 trimesters, but not for the 3rd. And there it was, right, in a book on the history of American law. Why does it persist, Hadley?
This is one of the remarkable things, because the media have been quite willing to present that account. I mean, the late Gene Rostow, beloved man, the former dean of the law school at Yale, was shocked one night at dinner table in our house in Washington when I explained to him the real reach of Roe versus Wade. And here is a professor of law, an accomplished man of the law. Well, what did he know about this? He knew mainly from reading the New York Times. And a dear friend of mine, a professor at one of the truly outstanding law schools in the country, once polled 25 of her colleagues, and of the 25, she found that only 5 of them, 5 of the 25, could give her an accurate account of what was in Roe versus Wade. It's a natural tendency for people to try to mute what is so glaring and so grisly and appalling before their eyes. And you see that now with the reaction of Planned Parenthood, this strange statement they've been putting out, that he's protected, that women will now be protected from Kermit Gosnell. Well, they're not concerned about the babies being destroyed by Kermit Gosnell. And what they're reacting to in the killing of those children after they survive the abortion is hardly tamer than the kind of killing they're quite willing to visit on the same child already in the womb when they have the child dismembered. So you've got a combination of things. Of the screen of ideology comes down, and people just are unwilling to acknowledge what is right there before their eyes. You remember the Lacey Conner case with two bodies washed on shore years ago?
Yeah.
And Zoe Lofgren in California said, no, this was an assault on a woman. Assault. She could not acknowledge that the unborn child, the child ripped out of the womb, washed onto the beach, was an actual being with standing in the world with potential claim then to our concern and to the protection of the law. The screen of ideology comes down, and she professes not to be able to see two bodies, can't see two bodies washed on shore, what anyone could see. So that people, rather cultivated people, with a good dose of theory and the screen of ideology, can simply block themselves off from seeing what is plainly before their eyes. I mean, it's all over now.
So are you saying, it sounds like part of what you're saying is, that the law has not only the function to regulate, but the law in this case, like the Born Alive Infants Protection Act, has the function, especially at an opportune time like this, to teach and to genuinely enlighten people as to what the current, not just the Gosnells, but what this current state of affairs with regard to abortion in the United States really is on the ground.
That's right. The classic understanding that the law teaches, when the law, for example, take another different kind of case, when the law forbids racial discrimination in public inns and restaurants open to transactions with the public, in a dramatic way, it takes that act of discrimination. It removes it from the domain of private choice, private belief, and it brings it to the level of a public obligation of something we regard as wrong and a restriction we're willing to impose on everyone under the law. That was the classic understanding of why the law would teach in a dramatic way that we regard something as wrong. And even though that bill, we held back the penalties of the bill for the sake simply of planting the premises, that if that bill were worked in the right way, then it indeed would have the function of teaching. Remember Rick Santorum in this famous exchange with Barbara Boxer on the floor said, what if the toe of the child were in the womb? Could I kill it? She said, of course not. I said, well, then what's the difference here? You know, and she became furious. People don't like the teaching, but in a gentle way, you can keep putting the question. As the other side, it was really remarkable when we came out with this bill, and National Abortion Rights Action League at the time came out in opposition to this bill to protect the child who was born alive. The reason they did that is because they saw precisely the principle that lay at the heart of the thing. They understood, curiously, in a way that some of our allies did not, that once they gave us this key premise in the bill, we could unravel their position. The remarkable thing is our people, the ones who passed the act, then simply didn't use it after that to do any teaching. They came back to the bill on partial birth abortion, seeming to forget the fact that they've already established that the child herself could be protected.
Hadley Arkus is professor of jurisprudence and American institutions at Amherst College. He's author of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act of 2002. You'll find a link to a recent column that he's written titled Revisit the Born Alive Infant Protection Act under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Hadley, thank you for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Todd. Good luck with the project.
When we come back, we're going to be talking about African-American pastors speaking out against attempt to redefine marriage in the state of Illinois. Bishop Lance Davis will be our guest. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Mount Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland, Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming, Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington, Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois, Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas, St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri, Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska, Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri, Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas, Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois, Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin, Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois, Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois, and Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget at our website, issuesetc.org. Click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Imagine steadfastlutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub. Your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm. So check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
Did you know that Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, sells CDs and audio downloads of teachings by some of the top Lutheran theologians in the country? Check out Logia's 99-cent download of the month at shop.logia.org. Shop.logia.org. You'll also find books published by Luther Academy and, of course, the quarterly Logia Journal at shop.logia.org. Continuing education for the confessional Lutheran, shop.logia.org.
A Philadelphia doctor accused of performing illegal late-term abortions in a filthy clinic has been found guilty of first-degree murder in the deaths of three babies born alive. But he was acquitted in the death of a fourth baby. Dr. Kermit Gosnell was also found guilty of involuntary manslaughter in the overdose death of a patient. Prosecutors say the 72-year-old Gosnell delivered babies alive and had their spines severed with scissors to kill them. The defense had argued there were no live births at the clinic. The grisly details of the case came out more than 2 years ago. That's when authorities described finding bags and bottles of fetuses at the foul-smelling clinic, as well as unsterile instruments that were reused. Prosecutors are seeking the death penalty. Nicole Grether, The Associated Press.
That's the latest from the AP on the Kermit Gosnell murder verdict that came down late this afternoon. Joining us for a reaction to that verdict, Pastor Matt Harrison. He's president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Matt, welcome back.
Hey, Todd.
What is your general reaction to the news out of Philadelphia that Kermit Gosnell has been found guilty of those three murders in the first degree?
I think my reaction is just sort of sadness. I think it's just sadness. And I think generally we know that the truth that what is inside the womb of a mother is human life, it's a person. And we've generally won that argument over time, assisted by science. So that's the reality. At the same time, I'm just sick to my stomach that we've come to this point, 53 million abortions after Roe v. Wade. We're at this point. And finally, some people are starting to ask the question, well, if you can cut an unborn child's head off in the womb or cut a spinal cord in the womb, why can't you do it a foot outside the womb with the same child? It's a sad, sick world, and it's a sad day. There is some justice there, but it's small justice compared to a Holocaust of 53 million.
Do you have hopes that the trial, as belatedly covered as it was, and especially that the verdict, might at least serve to teach people what's been going on for the last 40 years?
I think there's some indication that it will probably help in the late-term abortion arena, but I think that our increasingly secularized, and that means a culture that is devoid and divorced from its Christian roots and culture and and therefore doesn't know who God is really going to be incapable of any kind of sensical answer on the overall abortion question, although we continue to make progress. There's no doubt about it.
We look at the crimes of a Kermit Gosnell, and obviously even those who support what he did for a living, so to speak, are horrified by the details of how he plied his trade. And it's, I agree with you, horrendous to think about. That makes this next question probably even more important. Is there forgiveness? Is there mercy in Jesus Christ for even the likes of a Kermit Gosnell?
Yes, indeed. God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself. The sins of the world were paid for by Jesus. The reception of that forgiveness depends merely upon its reception, belief in that forgiveness, which is a consequence of repentance, sorrow over sin. So, yes, there is no sin excluded, not a Peter who denies Jesus, not a Judas who rejected that forgiveness and killed himself. Nobody is outside. Nobody is outside the reach of God's grace. It merely is to be believed.
What do you say to someone who says, "Pastor Harrison, that sounds great in theory, but think about what the man did. Think about the evil. Think about the callous conscience at heart that it must have taken for such a man to do these things." How would you respond to that?
I would respond that that is absolutely true. And there's a distinction here. A person, no Christian could commit these kind of actions, so we're talking about the possibility of a man repenting, being generally sorrowful for his life, committing murder, and trusting in the merits of Christ. I pray that happens for everybody who everybody in the world, no matter who they are. That's the right-hand kingdom, the kingdom of the gospel. In the left-hand kingdom, the kingdom of the state, he needs to be punished to the full severity of the law, and I hope he gets the death penalty. And if he were, by chance, to become a Christian, we're just speaking hypothetically here, by believing the gospel and having a changed heart and becoming a different man, then it would be his vocational duty to go to the death penalty, to bear witness to what happens to scoundrels who act this way.
Pastor Matt Harrison is president of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. Matt, thank you for giving us the time that you did. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. The Lord be with you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to discuss the Tower of Babel. Dr. Joel Heck of Concordia University, Texas, will be our guest. Well, I have to agree that I look at the life of what it must have taken day after day to go into that stinking clinic and do what he did. And do it, as far as we can tell, with very little remorse and very little concern. Who knows? There may be remorse there. There's no way to read the man's heart. But then I got to look at my own heart. I got to say, given the right circumstances, wouldn't that be me? Don't I, in my own way, with my own thoughts, my words, my deeds, things that you guys don't know about or read in the papers every day, things that don't get me arrested and put on trial, don't you do the same thing from the same black, calloused, hardened, sinful heart? Yes. So if there is mercy for me, there must be mercy for the likes of Kermit Gosnell. If there is forgiveness, if there is blood shed for me, then there must be blood shed for the likes of Kermit Gosnell. If there is an answer, a penalty paid for my sin that you guys don't read about in the papers that doesn't get me arrested or sent off to prison, then there must be blood shed and the penalty paid at the cross by Jesus Christ for the crimes of Kermit Gosnell. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Have you wondered what classical Lutheran education is all about? Are you a Lutheran homeschooler? Would you like to learn more about teaching students the essentials of biblical interpretation, law and gospel, or worldviews from a Lutheran perspective? Come join the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education July 16th through the 18th at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. For more information, visit ccle.org. That's ccle.org.
Issues, etc. What does this mean? We want to hear from you. Why do you listen? How has it helped you? What are your favorite topics? Who are your favorite guests? And what makes Issues, etc. unique? Please leave your thoughts about this worldwide outreach on the Issues, etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Be sure to give us your first name and tell us where you're from. Issues, etc. What does this mean? 618-223-8382.